We often forget the way the lives of other critters enhance our own. How about those summer nights alive with an orchestra of frogs? That's certainly a glorious chorus that's being lost in our cities with the relentless march of concrete and housing developments with few pockets of green space included. Who'd be a frog in the burbs? Ponds and puddles, the natural habitat of frogs are shrinking, and now there's the added impact of climate change. As you'll hear, increased temperatures may just well spell the end of many frog species. Is there anything you can do? I'm joined now by Jenny Holdway, who is Secretary of the Queensland Frog Society, and Joab Wilson, a conservation biologist at RMIT. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Natasha.
I love frogs. Joab, you've been investigating spotted marsh frogs at Mary Creek in urban Melbourne, one of my favourite parts of that city. Great to ride along. Describe the area for us and how frogs are faring there.
Well, the Mary Creek corridor is actually, as you were saying, it's a beautiful part of Melbourne, and it's kind of got this really interesting gradient that runs from, I guess, your really built-up areas in the centre of Melbourne, and it gradually sort of goes out to the rural areas. So you can really, you can take a ride along there or travel through there, and the levels of, traffic and urbanisation gradually decrease. And there are actually some really healthy populations of frogs in the Mary Creek corridor, such as the endangered growling grass frog, which has been disappearing in the last decade, and it's under a lot of threat, particularly from urbanisation.
Mm. How exactly do you measure and track frog populations to get a sense of numbers and how they're going across the generations, I guess?
Well, I guess because they're very elusive sort of creatures, they're not difficult. I mean, they're very difficult to find. So we often use calls. Like we can listen and call. Frogs will have a different type of call, so you can identify them by their call. But there's also search methods, like looking under logs and kinds of things that they might sort of be hiding under.
Mm. You wouldn't be able to do a call for us of the species that you just mentioned. What does it sound like?
It sounds like a tennis ball being hit, actually. All of the marsh frogs sort of have a...
As in dock? Dock?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and they all sort of... there's about three different species of marsh frogs that you'd find in Melbourne. You've got the pobblebonk, the iconic sort of banjo frog that's quite a loud thud, and then the spotted marsh frog, the one we were looking at, sort of a bit of a lighter thud. So you can tell the difference.
You've asked in your research who'd be a frog in the suburbs. As the city spreads, tell us about the plight of frogs, because are they able to survive in what becomes essentially fragmented pools and back gardens?
Well, they can survive, and the spotted marsh frog's an example of a species that's actually quite hardy, and it has, benefited from some forms of human modification, like dams and things in rural areas have provided more habitat for it. But as urban density increases and you get more large highways and pollution and probably predators such as cats and other sort of domestic pets, the frogs actually really find it difficult to survive under those conditions.
Jenny Holdway, I imagine it's a similar story in Brisbane, urban development squeezing out frog habitat. Are local councils doing anything in Brizzy to try and preserve frog habitat, or could they be doing more?
Brisbane City Council does have a Habitat Brisbane section, and that is very good because it does allow groups like ourselves to go into parklands and look after the natural drains that are still there that haven't been turned into concrete pipes. Mm. But I think they could do more. I agree with Hugh that we have to sort of stop this mentality of mowing and clearing and everything has to be so beautified and allowed, natural grasses and things, especially along wetlands, natural wetlands in our parks and so forth, to continue, because that's where the frogs are.
You encourage people, Jenny, as I imagine Joab does, to build frog habitats in their back gardens if they're lucky to have a back garden.
Yes.
What do you need to do to encourage frogs domestically?
Well, I mean, a frog only needs three things, major things. It needs water, which is very important. And if the people, if the, you know, the person with the backyard can identify what kind of frogs they've got, or they can hear in the summer, they can make a pond suitable for that, you know, that species. The frog needs food, and so that does sort of come down to no spraying, using of chemicals and that likes, and shelter. And that can be, you know, from leaf mulch to some shrubs, trees, just, you know, general piles of bricks or something like that. And the frog's fine. If they're in the area, they will come in and they'll inhabit your garden and please you no end.
Yes, and one thing I do know is that if you've got a sort of bathtub or a deep container in your back garden, make sure you have a stick in it so that frogs can get out, because we had a situation where a frog drowned in a bathtub in the back garden. It was so depressing. I mean, Jenny,
that's only for the ground frogs. So the tree frogs can climb. So something like a bathtub for a tree frog is absolutely wonderful because it keeps the cane toads out.
Yes, indeed. We'll come to cane toads, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Jenny, people like the idea that frogs eat mosquitoes. They're kind of a natural pest control. How do they fit into the ecosystem? If you've got frogs, what else are you likely to attract?
Snakes. you know, well, of course, the frog is part of the food chain, so there are other animals that come in and eat frogs. But look, on the whole, I really, very rarely have heard anyone's, you know, great concern about if they're encouraging frogs, they're going to have some nasties in their garden as well. And they are a great eliminator of all the pests on your vegetation, in your vegetable garden, because that's what the frogs do best.
Yes, I do gather, though, that the Queensland Frog Society fields complaints about frogs being too noisy.
Oh, yes, that could be the striped marsh frog. Unfortunately, it's been moved around in the early days, back in the 80s and 90s, by moving tadpoles. And it is in places where it shouldn't be, but it is a survivor. It's one of these frogs who can settle in any habitat. And we do get the odd complaint about the noise and some, but, you know.
Well, we're pretty noisy too. That's my take on it.
That's true.
Joab Wilson, conservation biologist at RMIT, recently you've modelled the potential impact of climate change and urbanisation on the frogs of Mary Creek in and around Melbourne. Give us the scenarios that you tested, because you tested a few different scenarios, didn't you? Best scenario, best case, middle case, worst case.
That's correct. What we were wanting to do was look at, I guess, different types of development scenarios. Melbourne has this sort of this thing called the urban growth boundary, which is this this line that's sort of been drawn around Melbourne that supposedly protects the green wedges outside of Melbourne from further sort of ad hoc development. And even though by law this line is meant to protect the land outside of this boundary, it's being constantly extended, so it's not really serving its purpose. And more suburbs are being built, you know, each year.
Mm. So what did you look at?
What we were looking at was how these developments might, you know, future developments might impact on the frog, and also how, you know, changes in, or going by the CSIRO climate change predictions, how these kinds of changes in temperature might change the amount of water available to the frogs. And so, you know, a lot of people sort of look at how one sort of factor might impact on a species, but what we want to look at was how they would, the two factors combined and how that might influence or affect the species.
So you were taking the CSIRO climate change predictions for the region that indicate likely temperature increases of 3 degrees.
Yes.
So in modelling the impact of urbanisation and climate change, what stood out? And models have all their constraints and limitations, don't they? But what stood out for you?
Well, what stood out the most was that even at the highest level of the climate change predictions, there was, I think, about a 40% sort of likelihood or decrease in the likelihood of the species persisting in the area. But under the even just an intermediate urbanisation scenario was around the same, and even with high development, it was like a 90% decrease in the likelihood of the species being there. So that was quite alarming in one way, that development is having perhaps a greater impact than climate change. But at the same time, we could kind of take a positive from that, that I guess urbanisation and development is something that we can actually, we've probably got more of an ability to mitigate against and to try and prevent, further habitat from being destroyed. And also with climate change, we need more habitat because I guess in before humans were on the planet, in times when climate change, species were able to migrate to new areas through going through habitat. But now, given that landscapes are so fragmented, these kinds of migrations will be a lot more difficult.
Well, a question for both of you then. Are planning laws the main game if we want to save urban frogs, given the impact, likely impact of urbanisation? I mean, what role do councils and their tango with developers have here? Joab?
I think that planning changes in planning could definitely help, the plight of frogs. I think we really need to... I think the first thing is to try and protect habitat that's already there. I think that by removing habitat and replacing it with something else is not ideal. I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's not ideal. So the first thing would be to protect existing habitat and to sort of look at the range of species that it could potentially impact upon. And then also just to improve habitat that's already there. We already know that there's not enough, and we need to kind of, create adequate corridors and buffer areas from the areas that are built to the ones where there is still existing habitat.
Jenny Holdway, on that front, what's your point of view there? And also, I want to add an additional question just before we wrap. Why should we care about the frogs amongst us?
Well, I agree with Joab says. I think the council should be most probably have that little light bulb above their head saying, can we build on this? On this other piece of, what looks like scrub land, who wants it, doesn't matter, who goes in there, that sort of thing, attitude. I think that has to be now a little bit more in the fore, because we are losing so much. We're losing our open drains to, as I said, concrete pipes. We're losing a whole lot of things around suburbs, and there is nowhere for the frogs to go, because they have their own habitat. You can't put that frog somewhere else and think it's going to survive, because it won't. Mm. Sorry, what was the second question?
And why should we care?
Oh, why shouldn't we?
Exactly.
Well, they're an indicator. I mean, for one thing, if you've got a nice, healthy ecosystem around your suburb, and you've got frogs and you've got birds and you've got everything else happening, your lizards in the backyard, that sort of stuff, you can be very happy. And... yes, why not? Look, they've been on the planet for millions and millions and millions of years. I mean, why should we be the ones to say, no, your time is up?
Good point. Joab, do you have a final point there?
I think Jenny hit the nail on the head there. I think that frogs and all wildlife, are so important. And I think that, having them in the cities is also a great educational sort of thing. I think if we sort of encourage sort of wildlife to be in our cities, given that these are where most people live, we'll have more of an idea of conservation and our connection with wildlife.
I would agree.
Sorry, with the rest of biodiversity.
Yeah, we're only one cog in a very vast... vast natural enterprise. Jenny Holdway, Secretary of the Queensland Frog Society, and Joab Wilson, conservation biologist at RMIT. Thanks for joining us on Life Matters this morning. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Natasha.
Thanks, Natasha.
What are you doing to cultivate a habitat for frogs in your neighbourhood, I wonder? I'd like to hear. Coming up, well, Lauren Henley, her incredible story of losing her sight, but effectively becoming an activist on some of the issues that are important to her. You're with Life Matters on RN. I'm Natasha Mitchell.